This is Creepy and Geeky, a part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcast Network. Welcome to Creepy and Geeky. I'm your host, Robert, and on today's episode, Violet Hammond joins me to talk about Avengers Infinity War. Violet is the managing director of a theater in New York. She's also been a guest on several other podcasts, including Frame to Frame, Pick a Disc, and Den of Ten. Welcome to the show, Violet.
Thanks for having me back. I'm very excited.
Yeah, excited to have you back.
Yeah, we had a good time last time.
Yes, we did. And we should have a good time this time as well. Avengers Infinity War is a good movie. I really like it. It's one of the better ones. And of course, you know, as we talked about in the Winter Soldier episode, that these movies are written by the same writers and directed by the same directors. Christopher Marcus, Stephen McFeely wrote these, and the Russo brothers, of course, directed these. And this was kind of like, you know, the path that the MCU was taking. Kevin Feige sat down and was just like, you know what? We like what you guys did with Winter Soldier. Let's keep that going. They did it through Civil War, through Infinity War, and then into Endgame.
Yep.
And so it's, it was a good roadmap. I think without these particular people helping to guide the MCU after this point, that I wouldn't say it's meandered, but I definitely think they kind of lost the plot a little bit. In phase four. I think they're trying to refine it in phase five. But I think phase four was definitely a transitional period after these movies. And I'll of course get into that when I start focusing on those movies. But this is right, where things start to end for what we knew. What we've been going through for 10 plus years at this point. And so,
yeah, it's a long time.
So Infinity War is the beginning of the end. it's the beginning of a two-parter, beginning of everything that we had, known up to this point, everything involving Iron Man and Captain America and everybody who've been coming through all this. You know, it's this movie really kind of throws everybody in there. Like everybody who's been up in the MCU up to this point is in this movie.
Yep.
And it's a really good, I wouldn't say it's a fun movie. There's definitely fun parts to it, but having rewatched this movie, like, and it's been a little while since, like, I rewatched it not too long ago. But without really focusing on it and wanting to focus on it this time for the podcast. I saw it with kind of newish eyes. And of course, every time I go and watch these movies, I watch them, initially any movie I go to watch, I just go to watch and absorb it all the first time. And then, subsequent viewings are the ones where I go, okay, you know, what did I miss the first time? And so this one really got down to it. And this one, when you really look at it, and I know it, even after the first viewing, this one's a sad movie.
Oh, yes.
But this one,
very much so.
This one, every fucking beat of this movie is fucking sad. Like,
yes,
there's funny bits here and there, but this is a fucking downer. Like, I've heard so many people say that Infinity War is their favorite Marvel movie, and I'm like, why?
No,
this movie's like, even out of this and Endgame, I'm like, Endgame is my favorite out of those two. Like, it's not my favorite of the entire MCU, but like, out of these two, Endgame is the much more fun, more action-packed. It's got some down moments, but it's not as down as this movie is. Movie's a fucking downer. So sad, like, throughout the whole thing. Anyway,
I wound up staying up till 3 a.m. because I Because I watched this and I pulled like a Return of the Jedi. Like, I can't watch Empire Strikes Back without watching Return of the Jedi. So I had to put Endgame on.
Oh,
I'm like,
no.
I can't. I'm like, I can't go to sleep like
Another 3 hours.
No, I skipped the last hour. If you go to the last hour, you get like right before. Well, yeah. that's another podcast. So I won't get there. But yeah, like I had to Return of the Jedi. I couldn't do it. I'm like, I can't
that's
leave
so
it
funny.
Like this. How am I supposed to sleep like this? I couldn't do it. I'm up till
That's too
3
funny.
a.m. writing my angry notes.
Oh no. Yeah, no, this movie. Well, I mean, and I don't want to go beat for beat because I don't like doing that. But I definitely want to
We'll be
hit
here
the
for
major.
days.
Oh, I know. this episode would end up being just as long as
As
the
the
movie
movie.
itself. But I do want to. I want to do. I do want to hit the big moments. And one of the first moments we get is the realization that Thanos has, and because we got it at the end of Thor Ragnarok that Thanos' ship
That
was
the ship
there.
was there. Yes.
Yeah. And they were like,
Ugh.
oh crap. And so then we get the aftermath of all that. Everybody is decimated. Everybody, like, I don't know how there's any Asgardians actually in New Asgard
Right.
to be there. Like,
They explain
how
that
did they get
somewhere.
away? Like,
They did
I
explain that somewhere. I can't
did
remember
they?
what
Because I don't
they
remember.
did. I think they did. I think there was another, I think Valkyrie was on
There was
another
they
part of
had
the ship and they escaped. I think that
yeah
was the explanation. I'm not,
they would
it's been a
have to have
while. Yeah, it's
yeah
been a while, so I can't, I might be making that up, but I'm pretty sure that is what happened. I think that there was either
yeah
another part of the ship or some kind of escape pod that Valkyrie took them
yeah
off.
that makes sense.
But they had to have, because everyone is
Yeah,
gone. It's
everybody's
absolutely
gone.
heartbreaking.
Yeah,
It like,
well,
what a way
and
to start this movie. God.
yeah, and Thor is like beat to hell. Loki's beat to hell. Like Heimdall's lying on the floor dying.
Dying.
And so we get this moment of all of this, and just Thanos and his Black Order are there, and
Yeah.
it's like devastating. Like, because at this point
Yes.
too, Thanos has two of the stones. And he's there to get the third one,
He's
which of
got,
course.
he's, I think he has one. I think he has power because he took it from he took that one and then he's there to get the Tesseract.
Yeah, but he
So
had
it
the
just
space
isn't.
stone too already.
Did he?
Because that's how he teleports out.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
You're right.
So I
Yeah.
th Yeah, because he's got power in space. So yeah.
He's got two. Okay. Yeah. And then
Yeah.
he's there for the third.
Then he
Yes.
gets the third. And then he gets to nowhere where there's the fourth. And
Right.
then gets the time stone, then gets yeah.
Yeah.
I have to keep track of it all because it's like, wait, what did he
What?
have?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, by the time we even jump into here, he's already got
He's
two
already got
stones.
two. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
It's
so
taken him 10 years. He has zero. And then all of a sudden, in like two
yeah, all of a
days,
sudden now
he
he
gets
gets
it all
it's like,
done.
well, and then like we get that end credit bit in what is it? Was it in Ultron? Where
Oh,
he's
he's
like,
like, I'll
fine, I'll
do it
do it
myself.
myself. Yeah. It's like, you should have done it yourself in the first place.
Can't
Like,
find any good help these days.
see, this is what drives me crazy about this Thanos too, is
Oh.
the Thanos in the comic books is much cooler, much more psychotic. And not, I wouldn't say cooler, but he's more powerful and more psychotic, for sure.
Okay.
Because so the difference is, and this isn't something I've gone into yet, because this is really our first encounters with Thanos in any meaningful way.
Yeah.
And so the Thanos in the comic books is in love with death.
Yes.
And in the Marvel Universe, in the comic books, there is a physical personification of death. It's a feminine version, a feminine skeleton in a hooded cloak. And occasionally she wears a humanoid face, but most of the time she's just kind of skeletal. And so he's actually in love with this personification of death. But so she kind of puts him on the trail of gaining these in the comic books, they're gems, not stones.
Yes.
So he's put on the trail of these infinity gems because he is nothing to her. He doesn't have enough power to rate, no matter how many people he kills or anything else. And there's a huge, way more backstory going on because he goes back to the 70s and he has encounters with Adam Warlock. Adam Warlock has this group, this kind of team of people with him, which includes the original version of Drax, and Gamora and Pip the Troll. And so there's this whole backstory that goes into there. Thanos dies at one point, gets encased like in stone, and is dead for many years. And then comes back sometime in the late 80s, mid to late 80s, in the Silver Surfer comic books. And he encounters the Silver Surfer and then starts the road to gaining the Infinity Gauntlet. So all this to say that the way he gets the stone slash gems is different in the comic books. It's a much more, to me, it's a much more interesting journey because most of the gems that he has to get are held by various members of what are known as the Elders of the Universe. And the Elders of the Universe is this group of people who are, they were the last members of their planet, of their species, when they become the last members of their species, they attain immortality. So they become the Elders of the Universe. Among those that we've met in the MCU are the Grandmaster and the Collector.
Mm. Oh, cool. Okay.
So we don't know that in the MCU. They haven't really pointed that out, which has been frustrating. I'm like, come on, guys. Because I think it's an interesting. They haven't really explored we've seen bits and pieces, like in Thor: Love and Thunder, we finally see it, Eternity. Mm-hmm. But there's these cosmic aspects, and death is one of them. And so that's where I'm kind of getting to all this long-winded explanation of all this. Thanos is in love with this personification of death, and he wants to prove himself to her, and so he goes and gathers these Infinity Gems. And then once he gains them all and he becomes basically pretty close to the most powerful person in the universe, death now is like, well, now I'm not worthy enough for you. So he is just like, he can't win either way. And his whole goal to prove his love to her was the whole goal, was to gain the Infinity Gauntlet so that he could snap and wipe out half the universe and basically kill all these people to prove to her how much he loves death.
Gotcha.
So they had to change his motivations for the MCU because they hadn't gone through all that in the MCU. And so it makes it, to me, a weird motivation. I get his reasonings. Don't get me wrong. He goes through his reasonings through this movie about how his planet was on the verge of collapse and he had to kill half of it he came up with the idea of killing half the populace to balance everything. Yes. And then he starts his campaign across the universe of taking his Black Order and everybody and going across the universe and killing half of everybody on every planet. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, and he tells Gamora through the course of this movie that, you know, on her planet where he did this, that now, you know, when she was there, they were on the verge of collapse. And now everybody is happy. Everybody's well fed and everything. And so while that's all well and good, that his motivations, and it's something that I heard from later on, is that whenever he snaps, and I'm jumping way ahead, whenever he snaps and just like decimates all life, you know, half of all life in the universe, according to the writers, and I think the directors, I'm not sure, I'd have to go back and look, but back when somebody asked them, they're like, did that mean all plant and animal life? And they said, yes. I'm like, then you put it at status quo then.
Yeah.
You literally made everything exactly where it is, just right. lesser. So yeah. the goal was null and void then. Your dumb. End goal was null and void. So that's where I was going with all this, because Thanos is an idiot.
Yeah.
So
and
we're gonna get
why
into more
is it
of
your
it,
business?
Yeah.
It's like it's none of your business. Stay in your lane. Why are you bothering everybody?
Yeah.
Like,
so that's where I wanted to go with all that, was yes. just to get to that point, was just because all of this is just like, I at least appreciate that Thanos in the comic books is so psychotic mm-hmm. that his motivations are just, he's in love with death and wants to kill everybody to prove himself to her. That
makes more sense.
I mean, it doesn't make more sense, but it's actually a motivation I can get behind in terms of, instead of just killing people because you think it's the right thing to do,
right?
You know, to save the rest of the universe, which yeah. nobody asked for.
No, nobody asked for it. I'd rather psychopaths gonna psychopath than, you know, just getting in everybody's business, making things right. worse. Yeah. That's all it is. It's like a giant medal.
Yeah.
Like, nobody asked for this.
So I, going back to the beginning, because I very much veered hard all the way off. But going back to the beginning with Thor and Loki and Thanos and him getting the two stones. But I think that's why I got off target, because I thought the journey of him getting the stones was more interesting in the comic books mm-hmm. than it was. Because they actually did. He was in the Silver Surfer comic books, and then they veered off and created a 2-issue prestige limited edition series called Thanos Quest, and where he went and got the Infinity Gems, and so I thought that was interesting, and then it tied back into Silver Surfer, and then went into the Infinity Gauntlet miniseries that they did, and people should really go check that out though too. Like if you like these movies, definitely go check out the Thanos Quest series and the Infinity Gauntlet. I believe they're collected together in various editions. I'd have to look it up, and I'll mm-hmm. try to look it up and figure out what's the best option. But I think that by the time we're here, he's already got the two stones. We don't get to see how he got them. And all we see is we come into this just devastating scene. And like we said, Thor's beat to shit, Loki's beat to shit, and Heimdall's on the floor dying. And you know, they're trying to, Thor is just being Thor. He's trying to, you know, be big and bad, and you know, and everything is not working for him. Mm-hmm. Loki's trying to weasel his way out of it as usual. And Loki pays the price.
Yeah.
I mean, the Loki we all know and love from this timeline is
correct.
Gone. Yeah.
He is
just completely gone. And it's disappointing, because you could see, at least through Ragnarok, there was some growth, not a lot of growth, but some growth.
No, he had a great character arc. He had growth.
He did. No, yeah. He did have growth, but I mean, he was still being Loki, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like at the end of Thor Ragnarok, and you know, he's about to betray Thor, and Thor like pulls one over on him. You know, Loki's going to be Loki no matter what.
That, yes, he's always going to be like that. But he does, you can see him grow. That was, I was, when I saw this movie in the theater the first time, I took a metal, like a stainless steel 32-ounce water bottle full of Chardonnay. Because I read all the spoilers.
Oh no.
I always had reasons, because I knew I needed to know what was going on so that I could comfort my son. So I was in the first 15 minutes, he's going to lose like two of his favorite characters.
Yeah.
And me too. I was horrified. So I'm sitting there and I'm sitting here trying to do the math. I think, was this 2018?
I think so. Let me look.
So he was six. So we were sitting there and Thanos chokes out Loki. Yeah, so he was six. So we're sitting there and Thanos chokes out Loki and he screams in the middle of the theater, "This is why I didn't want to see this movie." And I'm crying. I'm like, I know. We have 2 hours and 40 minutes left. Let's just push through. So,
oh no. Yeah.
I knew,
no.
Yeah. So I had to be prepared because if I was a disaster, then he wasn't going to have anybody to turn to. So for this and for Endgame, I read all the spoilers first before going in.
Yeah. I mean, I can see that, especially with younger kids and everything. That makes sense. But yeah. No, I just like, yeah, this movie just kills you right from the beginning. And you're just like, okay, well, you know, like, and we don't know what happens to Thor for a little bit either. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the Hulk appears, he goes toe to toe with Thanos for a moment before getting the crap beat out of him and getting in what is Heimdall's last act of life and sends him through the Rainbow Bridge back to Earth.
Yes. And Mark Ruffalo is so good in this movie. Like, I just want to say, he's so convincingly terrified the entire time that it's great. But that's also why it's so hard to watch this movie. And I think we mentioned it when we talked about Winter Soldier in terms of how they put in so much work to get you to know these characters. So it's really like watching your friends get beat up, get hurt, get killed. Like, you're already so invested because of all the time you've spent with them that it's heartbreaking. It's so hard. It's a difficult watch.
Well, and this is the thing that other like attempts at trying to create movie universes always fail at, is that they never give you enough time with the characters before they try to pull one over on you and to make you really care about the characters. We have spent multiple like years, like over 10 years, 2008 to 2018. By the time Infinity War comes around, it has been 10 years with the MCU. We've had multiple movies with all of these characters crisscrossing back and forth between them all. And getting to know them and getting to live in their lives as, you know, as much as we've been able to. And we've gotten to know them. Like, we've, at this point, we'd already had the full Iron Man trilogy, the full Cap trilogy, the full, at that point, Thor trilogy, plus two Avengers movies, plus all the assorted other movies that came out. And so we'd already been invested so much in all these. But yeah, this movie, like we knew going into this, like anybody who knows things, like, and especially anybody who'd read the comic books, you knew the 1-2 punch of this movie, that at the end of this movie, a lot of people were going to be gone.
Yes.
And so, and you could kind of feel it anyway, even coming up to it, like anybody who knew, like even if you didn't know the comic books, you kind of had an inkling that some people were going to die.
It was on the wind. Yes.
Yeah. And so, and it just, it's so heartbreaking for the people who die before the snap. And so it's just because there's no getting those people back.
No.
So people like
Gamora.
Gamora, Loki, and Vision.
And Vision.
You know, they all die before the snap. And so there's no really getting them back. And the ways we've gotten any of them back have been basically variants. And you know, and there, it's just not quite the same. And that's the thing, like going into the whole Gamora of it all too. Like we'd built up with her in the two Guardians movies, and the relationship between her and Peter Quill had grown and blossomed, and you really see it in this movie how close they've become over that time. And like, her death is so heartbreaking because, like, at least with Loki, you're there for it. Thor was there for it. And as much as it hurts, he was there. nobody was around with Gamora. Like, no. She just gets taken by Thanos, and they find out later that she's dead.
Yeah.
And that, you know, and that, and Nebula has to be the one to tell them, you know, yes. And it's just like, he came back, but she didn't, but, and yeah. He has the stone. So mm-hmm. Something happened.
Yeah.
And it's no, just,
yeah,
this, this movie. And like, yeah, of course we get Gamora back. But again, it's from an earlier time, and mm-hmm. those relationships didn't come together the same way. And so everything after that point, and you get it later in Guardians 3.
Yep.
That you find how much those relationships are just gone.
And it was difficult watching this, having seen Guardians 3, because they were so cute together.
Yeah,
I was like, this is awful. I mean, I find Chris Pratt insufferable in this movie, but their scenes are really cute. Yeah, I do not buy the whole like Thor Star-Lord shenanigans. I was like, thank you, but no. Let's move on. Just hang out with Rocket and Groot, because this, like, it's like, just
yeah.
Shut up. Like, he is. He's insufferable in this. Absolutely. But their scene was so cute.
But that's the character, at least. So yes. At least it's in keeping with the character. And he's just like, and that's what kills me too. And again, we're jumping all over the place.
We are.
But but this is my show. Yes. And but that point where they're fighting Thanos on Titan, mm-hmm. and like, and they almost have
they
it.
They're so Peter, close.
Peter can't not be Peter.
I know.
And it's just like, oh, but why, dude? Like,
there's an awful lot of people in this movie who just are who they are, and it's going to happen no matter what. And that, yes, yeah, that is, like, it's coming off of his hand. It's coming off of his hand.
Yeah. Why? Yeah. Peter Parker, the other Peter. He sits there and he's almost got it off.
So close.
And he grabs it back. And it's like, oh man, dude. So this is what's interesting too, though. There is a scene in the comic books in the Infinity Gauntlet storyline where they get the glove off of him. Mm-hmm. They restore everything. And it's not the same. There wasn't a 5-year gap in the comic books where like things were just devastated and everything. Like, mm-hmm. It was pretty, they had this huge fight. There was a whole nother superpowered guy involved, Mephisto. He's basically Marvel's version of Satan.
Cool.
And yeah, no, it's like, there's so much going on. Like, really read the comic books, because the comic books are very interesting and awesome. So it's just, I need to get back on track. But
we're all over, but it's okay.
I know, going back to the beginning, because sure. You know, Thor, you know, but just past that, the Hulk mm-hmm. lands on Earth, and with Doctor Strange's Sanctum Sanctorum.
Mm-hmm. We get the beginning of Steven and Tony's fantastic
Steven
dynamic.
Steven and Tony, yep, yep. The two, the two most egotistical, like, so sure of themselves guys who constantly fuck things up.
Yes.
And then have to fix their mistakes.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. And so, and it's great, you know, and they're the mustache bros. There was something there in the comic books. Yeah. No, they've got a great dynamic, because they both know they're the best at what they do. And mm-hmm. They're just like, their ego unchecked.
Yep.
And it's great. So, because like, while Tony definitely has people who hold him in check, mm-hmm. between Pepper and Rhodey and everybody else, nobody gives him shit like Strange does.
No.
Strange goes toe to toe with Tony on a level that nobody, because like Pepper and Rhodey, they're still a level of, they give him shit, but they also can't keep him in check.
No, because he plays them. He knows how to play.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't know how to play Strange, and Strange can't be played.
No.
And so, so it's fun to see that dynamic every step of the way too, because like, you know, going to the end. Strange gives up the fucking farm on this one.
Yeah. I mean, I know he has a reason, but
yeah. And we don't know the reason yet, but you know, there is definitely a reason. And it's just, it devastates Tony. Like, you know, yeah. Because I mean,
it's
you
a betrayal.
They lose. Yeah. Yeah. And they lose. And you know, Strange is like, look, there was no way to win.
No.
And
some insane number, 14,605,000. Yeah. And this is the one way that we win.
Yeah.
God.
But we have to win by losing first. So
he's playing the long game, the really long game.
It's so crazy too, like to play such a long game like that, but that's the only way to win.
It's the only way.
Yeah. So anyway.
Yes.
Well, hit me with some of your notes since I'm jumping all over the place. This is hard for the, I'm like, you know, because I'm going noteless. I'm just going, okay,
it's a lot. It's a lot to talk about.
It is a lot to talk about.
I haven't seen, like I said, I haven't seen the whole movie in a really long time, because usually I'll just jump around and watch some scenes and then I skip to like the last hour of Endgame. So this scene that I was like, wow, these are really, really good filmmakers, was that scene in at the beginning with Tony and Steven and Wong, when and Bruce, when he's telling them about what happened on the ship, and then Tony realizes what's happening outside, and the way he all you see is him walking to the door and you can see people through the glass running around, but you don't really know what's going on. And then he like the unveiling of the chaos was filmed so well. That was great. The tension as he's heading toward that door. I was like, this is a really well shot scene. Congratulations, guys.
Yeah. You know, and that's what's interesting with these guys, too, because like and I mentioned it back in the Winter Soldier episode. The Russo brothers come from like sitcoms. They come from Community.
Yeah.
Like, and I love Community. Don't get me wrong. The reason why they got the MCU job was because of the episodes they did with the paintball. The paintball episodes, and those were shot so well, so cinematically, and they've been doing it since Winter Soldier. They've done so many great shots and so many cool scenes, and you know, this just continues that. They were obviously the best choices for doing these massive stories. And I'm glad that Kevin Feige recognized that and transitioned away from, you know, the guy who was doing the first couple of Avengers movies, and
yes.
Then, you know, I'm not going to name it. but then we get the Russo brothers, and they carry that torch very well. So,
yes. And the changes in the vibe are handled so well, too. Oh, yeah. Like when you go from place to place, like it's really, really done so well. You can tell like the signature of each group is there. But still, it doesn't feel like it's all over the place or, you know, all jumbled up. It feels very focused.
They do a good job at maintaining everybody's original voices and the same flavors, because the Russos are directing, like, even the Guardians of the Galaxy, but they're keeping their James Gunn-like tones because they know their characters at this point. And James Gunn did also help consult for those scenes. And so that's what's nice is that it was a total team effort in this way, that they had these other directors come in, and help keep things tonally consistent. And that's what I really liked about when a lot of people give the Marvel universe, the Marvel movies shit about being kind of same and everything. And I get it. Don't get me wrong. I do see it. I just think that consistency isn't necessarily a bad thing. I think that keeping an overall similarity and everything while giving little touches of different like sensibilities and stuff like that is good. And that's when you bring in somebody like Sam Raimi or somebody in like Taika Waititi, you know, good or bad. I think Ragnarok's more successful than Love and Thunder is.
That's a general consensus.
I also think Ragnarok was better because it was written by somebody else, and Taika Waititi came in and put his sensibilities on that story and kind of maybe rewrote some stuff, whereas
that's
Thor Love and Thunder is more of a complete Taika Waititi, you know, all over the place. But again, I still feel like Love and Thunder isn't nearly as bad as everybody says it is.
No, I like that one. I know I'm in the minority, but I like that one.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
But But I think that, you know, keeping that tonal consistency through it all is a good idea, because you see it in other cinematic universes where when you don't have that tonal consistency, you don't have somebody who can steer the ship like Feige does, that everything just goes out of whack and right. nothing makes sense. And, you know, as much as, again, as much as people complain about it, I think that it's good. But again, I go back to the what I've said before on multiple of these episodes. Watch what you want to watch out of these. Don't watch mm-hmm. every single one of them. You don't have to.
No, so they just give watch what you enough watch. To know what's yeah. going on. I mean, even yeah, in exactly. this, it's like they give you a little primer again on what these stones are and what's I'm like, okay, yeah. well, we yeah. know, but there are people there who haven't. There is a hilarious YouTube video of people taking someone to see Endgame who hadn't seen a single
yeah.
MCU movie, and they could still follow it and they still yeah. cried. So it's like, you know, they're doing yeah. their job. You don't have to slavishly watch everything. You can
I think,
just take what you want from it.
Yeah. And I think the problem is that when you have watched them all, you feel like you have to keep watching them all, and you don't have that distance to come out of it. And I've had people who I've talked to since you know, they came like after Endgame, they kind of fell off because mm-hmm. Some of the stuff didn't appeal to them. And then they maybe watched one thing and then they were like, you know what? You were right. It wasn't bad. I understood enough. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's good confirmation. And I was happy to hear that, because I'm too close to it. I really am. Right. I love the comic books. I love the movies. This is everything I've always wanted. Mm-hmm. You know, hit or miss, you know, there's definitely been some misses for me. But you know, that's like it is with the comic books as well. You know, I don't sure. read every single comic book. And it's been years since I've read some of them. And so, but overall, getting back to the whole point of this mm-hmm. was that I love what the Russo brothers are doing, because that's what you said in the beginning.
Yes. The changes yeah. in vibe are handled so well.
Yeah.
And
the meshing between the groups too.
Yes.
You're getting Tony and Peter and Strange all together mm-hmm. with the Guardians of the Galaxy. And you're just like, that works so well they were able to, the writing was on point and the direction was on point enough that you have these different groups that could work together in a way that shouldn't work, but does. And
yes.
that's what good writing and good direction is.
So. Mm-hmm. And they did set up like the little subsets of characters in different places yeah. are set up really well. Like
yeah.
the people who are in Wakanda all work well together. The people who yeah. are in space, that all works well together. So it was definitely, you can see the care that it was constructed with, for sure.
Definitely.
I have in here, I know Thanos is the biggest bad ever, but Ebony Maw is such a dick. God, every time he opened his mouth... We're sitting here at the beginning, the very beginning of the movie. Everybody's lying on the floor dead, and this guy cannot stop running his mouth. Shut up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shut up.
He's the most pretentious guy ever. Like, I would like if it, like, I don't understand how Thanos even puts up with him. Like, just no. like, dude, like, shut up. Like, why is this guy talking for you? Like,
you're so lucky to die. Oh my God. Yeah. Guy, shut up. Every time,
I'm not gonna lie, I was very happy to see him die.
Oh, so. And I was waiting for him to come back, because you know that's just the way it always is. But he doesn't,
right.
thank goodness. Like, spoiler, that guy, he's floating in space, probably still talking in his head. Shut up, good Lord. Okay, so where you want to go now? Because next thing I have is Wanda and Vision. And then you know who's coming after that. The superior version of Captain America.
So I do want to talk briefly about the Black Order themselves. Because Ebony Maw, and then you've got Corvus Glaive. You've got...
The Midnight
They're
Lady.
All like... Yeah. yeah. They're all Midnight Proxima. Yeah.
Yes.
Or Proxima Midnight.
There Proxima Midnight. Yeah. And they all talk too much.
And then Cole Obsidian.
Yeah.
And so
they all took villain monologuing 101. Shut up.
Well, they're all just so bland.
Yeah.
Like Ma is at least somewhat interesting, but at the same, because he's such a pretentious asshole,
yes,
that like that's what makes him somewhat interesting. And then especially because he's going up against Tony and Strange.
Yes. So Earth is closed today.
Yeah. So it's like the most pretentious alien in the universe going against two of the most egotistical guys on the planet. So it was like
a lot of personality going on.
Yeah. Like you had no chance, man. So these two like to run their mouths more than you do. So be quiet. Yeah. And I say that with all the love in the world for both of those characters, because I do. Yeah. I love both of those characters in the MCU. So mm-hmm.
I'd rather hear them than that guy. So yeah.
Yeah, right. But yeah, no, that was my main thing was to say, was just that they are so bland and uninteresting as a group. That it's just like I'm glad when each one of them gets wiped off the board.
Yes.
So yeah, spoiler alert. Everything's a spoiler alert on the show. If you're listening to this, it's a huge spoiler alert. But yeah, it's just I think they're really there just to be his henchmen and to get wiped off the board.
Yes.
And that's just it.
So. Yeah. That's all.
Yeah. But yeah, let's get into Wanda and Vision. The most annoying couple ever. That have no.
Okay.
Only because they set up this whole like romantic aspect of them that we barely even got a hint of. The last time we saw them was in Age of Ultron.
Yes.
And so there was the kind of inklings of a relationship there, and then by this point, of course, it's a few years later, and their relationship would have progressed, but because we didn't see any of that, there's a huge disconnect for me. And I'm sure it's not the same for most other people, but for me it was just like it doesn't gel for me. It doesn't, they're not, it's not a convincing relationship at that point. But you know, I understand that in the comic books, that's how it was. So I'm good with it. Right. But even though it's just like, we didn't get to see the progression. And I feel like having that romantic aspect, I'm sorry, but the romantic tension between Bruce and Natasha was more palpable than what was between Wanda and Vision.
Okay. Aww. I don't know if I agree with that. I love Wanda and Vision. All I was thinking while I was watching this was, thank goodness I had Wanda Vision after this, so that I could spend more time with them. I really love that. Yeah,
that show gives you much more time with them and gives you some emotional time with them, and that I like because of that. Even though that's a downer too. But
it is, but it's so good.
Everything about Wanda's a downer, so.
Yeah. 100%. Poor Wanda.
But yeah, so give me more of your thoughts about it.
When I'm watching this movie, I know it's coming. I'm getting all excited. And then you throw that spear, and who catches it? The superior version of Captain America. It's Bearded Cap. He's here. He is here. Oh God. When the three of them come in and just absolutely kick the crap out of them, it is fantastic.
Well, and it's so funny too, because you've got Captain America. Yes, he is more than average human.
Yes.
But he's still human. He's not on a superhuman level, compared to, you know, most people, even compared to, the Black Order. And then you've got Natasha, who's not superpowered, and you got the Falcon, who's not superpowered. So you've got these three human people who are just like kicking the crap out of them because they have the superior skill.
Yes.
And so that just goes to show that it just doesn't matter. Now, of course, they had Wanda's help, you know, through some of that. But
yes.
And you don't want to piss off Wanda. As we find out later. Yeah, but it's a great scene. Like that intro to Cap is just like, it's so good.
Yes.
Just that it's so pitch perfect to everything. And no, it's great. The whole like you know, he's got his kind of he's got his outfit from the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
But it's like tore, the star is tore off. It's all black and, mm-hmm. and everything. And it's reminiscent of the time that he was where he didn't have the shield. He'd in the 80s. And this goes into Falcon and Winter Soldier territory here. In the 80s, there was a comic in the Captain America comic books. He was told he had to come under the control of the U.S. government, and he mm-hmm. refused. So he gave up his costume and the shield. And another person, John Walker, became mm-hmm. Captain America for a time. And you find out more about that in the Falcon and Winter Soldier. During that time, he donned a costume that was reminiscent of his normal costume, but it was black with red and white stripes mm-hmm. And had a black star on it. And so he became just known as the Captain at that time.
Got it.
And so this outfit that he's wearing, of course, is just the outfit that he wore in Winter Soldier, but it's reminiscent because it's kind of got the black star on it and everything. And mm-hmm. it's darker and dirtier and everything.
Yep.
So it's was there no washing machines around, dude?
No.
You know, during these 2 years you've been.
You get the feeling they're on the run.
Yeah. No, I know.
They can't wash their stuff. No, they all look all beat up. I mean, they.
But Natasha has time to color her hair. Okay, come on.
That is true. She has a different hair color in every movie. She always looks amazing.
Always a different haircut. Yep.
Different haircut, different hair color. Yeah, no, she looks amazing. They all look so good. And you can tell that, like, that is another thing where it's not verbal storytelling, but in that scene, you can see how well they have been operating as a trio for all this time. And the shorthand between them, the looks between them, where they know what each other's thinking, like, it is, that's really effective in the storytelling. Cause you know, the three of them have just been out there like kicking ass and taking care of people and, you know, trying to do it in a way that they're not going to get caught. And that's just really, I want that movie.
Right. No, that's now, like, but, I would love, no. They can go back and make a movie that's set somewhere in between there. They already did a Natasha story after Civil War, so they can come.
That is true. I want Team Cap on Black the Widow. Run.
Yeah, right.
Watch the hell out
great,
of that.
That'd be a great movie.
Yeah, I want that. Let's go.
Right. Come on, Chris Evans, come back.
Listen,
come back.
I know. Oh God, please. Yeah, this is, and he just, I love him in this movie because he is so over it. He's over everything. The scene where he's like, well, I did it last night. He's not asking permission. He is done. No more. Yeah. None of this. Enough. Yeah. I love it. I wrote down, he's at peak badass.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's just done with everything. He's done with the government. Like, you know, just. Like, they need to stop Thanos and everything else, and they're not going to like sit on the sidelines and just wait for the government to decide what to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to do what they need to do, and that's peak Captain America. That's peak Avengers right there. So
yes, you know, absolutely.
They will just do what they need to do, and to hell with anybody else, you know, good or bad. So
I know, I love them. And then we get that flashback with Gamora. With a little baby Gamora, which is Ariana Greenblatt, who's killing it lately.
Yeah.
So
she is, man. She's
killing
like
it.
She was in the Barbie movie recently.
Uh-huh.
She's in Ahsoka as young
baby
Ahsoka.
Baby Ahsoka. Yep.
Yeah.
She's all over the place.
She was
so good in this too. She would have been much younger. She's like a great actress. You can see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and I love that she's choosing, like, you know, either her or her parents or whoever's choosing stuff for her. And hopefully
her agent.
Hopefully she's getting choices in this when people mm-hmm. are coming to her and going, hey, do you want to be young Ahsoka? And you know, and I love that she's playing in these spaces with Star Wars and Marvel and Barbie and stuff like that. And she's getting just to kind of, you know, do stuff that's interesting. She's obviously a good actress, and so
mm-hmm.
you know, and she proves it just in this one of her first roles as young Gamora. She's just, you know, it's a very small role, but mm-hmm. you know, it's a, you know, we get a little bit more of her at the end, so
delivered so well.
She's so good as young Gamora, and it was nice to see you know a young, because here's the thing. A lot of kids suck at acting. You know, they're just, you know, as a theater director who directs kids.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that they lack the passion. They haven't gained the talent yet. And so it's great when you can get a kid who is so good out of the gate like that. Yes. And it's rare. And so it's nice to see when you get somebody of that level so early on.
Right.
So
it is. It's rare. And then that's why you, I mean, I know sometimes people say, like, why is it always the same kids? I'm like, because they're the ones who can do it.
Because they're the ones who are good. Yeah.
They're the ones who can do it. Like, you know, you have those runs where, you know, the kid part is the same person for like, you know, 3 or 4 years. And it's because, you know, the agents have okay, let's get one of these three kids that we know can do it. That's, you know, that's the way it works.
Yeah. You know, you got, you know, your Chloe Grace Moretz or your Dakota Fanning. Or, you know, Haley Joel Osment, you know, it's just like, you know, I'm talking like late 90s, early 2000s kids, but, but they, I mean, they're all adults now.
They're adults now. Yeah.
But, and they're all still working, which is great. Like, thankfully, like some of this industry, like some of these kids haven't been eaten up by the industry. I know a lot of them do. But some of these kids manage to get through it and survive and go on to, you know, fairly good adult careers as well. So,
yeah.
But those kids, that's what's nice when you can see them. And like you said, you see them pop up and like every single thing that has a kid new role, they keep popping up. And so it's like, because they're good. You know, that's
good.
You know, everybody wants them. They're in demand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're getting that now with like McKenna Grace. And
I was thinking of.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here like, who is the girl? Chris Evans again, because she was in Gifted. And now she's starting to get older, but she was in Ghostbusters. Yeah.
She was in Ghostbusters Afterlife. Yep.
So she'll be in that again. Yeah. But she was younger Carol in Captain Marvel. So, okay. So you have like a run where you see the same kid, and it's, you know, for a couple of reasons. It's because they're good, they're talented, they have a natural talent, and probably it's because they're easy to work with and directable. Sometimes kids are not directable at all, and you don't have time for that on a big movie set. So that's why you wind up seeing.
And you only have so much time with these kids too. Yes, so you have to be able to get
the laws. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to be able to get what you can get out of them, especially if you got a kid centric movie, you know, and then something like this, where at least, you know, it was just like a small part. So she was probably literally like a day. So
she was in and out in like 2 or 3 days. Yeah, for sure.
Right. So, but it's nice when you can get somebody like this, an Ariana Greenblatt. I'm so glad that she's getting more roles and that she's continuing to go up. Like, this is the year for her. Barbie and Ahsoka, huge.
Yep.
And like, I've not heard a single bad thing about her performance in either one of them. And I've watched both of them and enjoyed both. So I think she's excellent. So,
yeah. Doing good. It was fun to see that since she's been in the conversation, and I was like, oh, here she is.
Yeah
that was great. All right,
what do you got next for me?
What do I get next? Okay, here we go. Now we head into
I'm gonna let you guide us today.
Ooh. So now we head into Wakanda, which it's so hard for me to watch that scene because I've seen the outtakes so many times. When T'Challa's talking to Bucky and had the goats wouldn't shut up in the background. Have you ever seen those outtakes?
I haven't seen that. I'll have to watch. Yeah.
You find it on YouTube. They were trying to get those lines. That scene is so short. There was so much more dialogue in it because the goats would not stop. And there's outtakes just of all of them crying, laughing because the goats are screaming in the background. Just go find it. It's so funny. So I can't help but giggle at that. But like, how this, my Bucky again, we have to talk about Bucky because they open up that case with the arm in it and he's just like, where's the fight? T'Challa's like, it's on its way. Put this arm on. We got to go. Like, there is, you had a couple of, you know, months of goat farming. Now it's time to go. We got to go fight. Yeah. And, you know, he gets over it. He's cool later, but that everything's on his face in that moment. Just,
oh yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Here we go again.
Yeah.
And T'Challa, like, the White Wolf has rested long enough. It's like, what? Has he? I don't know, dude. He's been out here for a while.
Well, the last time we saw him was Civil War. So,
yeah.
You know, and so, you know, obviously, you know, he's had some time. And you know, it's implied that, you know, he's, because it's not really said. And maybe that's in the dialogue that's been cut and everything. But there's, you get the sense that by living this more peaceful life for him, he's been able to get away and he's been able to reconcile some of his old life. You know, and kind of get to a point where he can accept, you know, this battle that's coming.
Yep.
As much as he's weary about it, because I'm sure, like, dude doesn't want to have to fight if he doesn't have to.
No.
But he resigns himself that, you know, at least with this, like, obviously T'Challa wouldn't ask him if it weren't important. So
yeah,
and especially I'm sure important enough to give him an arm. So. Yep. But yeah, it's a great scene. Every time I see Chadwick Boseman on screen now, it just breaks my heart.
Knowing
that his entire run in the MCU, he was sick with cancer the entire time. And that he still went through it like he did. Just because he wanted to be that character so bad that he was willing to continue to go through it. And yeah, it just breaks my heart every time. Because
so it's good hard in
the
to role.
He was so perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
And but you never see it once. Like nobody suspect, not even the people making the movie suspect it. And so it's crazy.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking. But, it really is seeing him now. But yeah, there was I can't even think of anybody else who could have
I'm glad they didn't continue. I'm glad that with the MCU they were just like, well, we just gotta move on. Well somebody else can be back Black Panther now. But not be T'Challa. So.
No, like, because you can't. It would have hurt too many people. There's way too much emotion wrapped up in that. It would have been in really poor taste. And I don't think that this franchise has ever really done anything that's in poor taste, really. I think they try.
They do.
They do try. Yeah.
I think if they do anything in poor taste, it's unintentional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or something that they can't get around. Like, I think, like, the only thing that I can consider right now is
I know what you're gonna say.
Jonathan Majors mess right now.
And it is a mess.
And Loki, just like, we're recording this the day after Loki season 2 premiered.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's just one of those things where you have to kind of separate. They had already filmed all that, and to scrap it all would have been so much more money and everything. That I understand why they didn't, and you know, hopefully they'll figure out a way around it in the future.
I have hope that they're gonna figure it out. I don't think that they're gonna leave it and not be able to fix it. I don't, but
I'm hoping maybe over the course of Loki they kind of transition it to something else. But we'll see.
We will. Just starting that journey.
But yeah, no, every bit with Wakanda is great. When Cap's crew gets there, and the bit with
Starbucks
Bruce bit where he's like, "Do we bow?" And Rhodey's
he's a king. Yeah.
And then he goes to bow, and T'Challa's like, "No, we don't do that there. Do that here." And Rhodey just like laughs, and it's such a great. Perfect, like, encapsulates perfectly what the Avengers are.
Mm-hmm.
They're a bunch of friends who, and not always like the best of friends, but they know that they can, you know, goof with each other enough that that they're comrades. They're basically comrades in this super intense, high stress situation, and you have to have those moments of levity to decompress because otherwise you'd go insane.
Absolutely. So. And they know, like, yeah, they give each other a hard time. They give Bruce a real hard time in this movie, but it's,
well,
you know, that it's all in good fun and that they all genuinely care about each other, and that it, you know, they're such a good team. Everybody has a part to play and they all play it. And it's just, you know, that's why we love them, because we can see that.
And I think it's important to mention the whole situation with Bruce in this movie, too. He starts off as the Hulk, and once he lands on Earth, he transforms back into Bruce and can't get back into Hulk mode.
No, Hulk doesn't want to come.
The Hulk personality is refusing to come out because he's scared of Thanos. Mm-hmm. He got his ass kicked by Thanos, and so he's refusing to come out and potentially be hurt by him again, which is a little bit not in keeping. And again, this different universe. So Hulk is Hulk, and Hulk, the aspect, the main thing of what the Hulk is the madder he gets, the stronger he gets. Mm-hmm. And so the Hulk is nigh unstoppable in any situation. So yes, getting his ass handed to him by Thanos is gonna, you know, put you down a little bit. So,
but it should, in theory, make him stronger,
right? Because you know, he's it would angry. Piss him off. Yeah.
So that doesn't always. Yeah, that's a little.
So there is a little disconnect there for me as a fan. But also, like, I get that they're having more fun and they're just trying to give a different situation because, yes, the Hulk would be pretty unstoppable, and it would be. They don't want somebody so super powered. So super strong that, you know, that they couldn't tell a good story around it. And I think that's ultimately where they come down on it, is like the more interesting story is to have Bruce not be able to access Hulk.
Well, it's interesting. And they had to set up a situation where Thanos was going to win, like no matter what, and no matter what happens over the course of this, you know, the 2.5 hours that this movie is taking us on. Thanos is going to win at the end. Right. And if the Hulk was there and super powered and really angry, then that throws a, you know, a wrench in it. So that is, I think, part of it. I know someone who calls it the plot force. The plot force said that Hulk had to stay inside Bruce and scream no every time everybody wanted him to come out. And that's what the plot needed. So this is... You know,
exactly.
This is where we are for this movie. And this movie doesn't do it that much, but I think that's definitely an example of the plot force.
Yeah. But there's also like we find out that it's also part of Bruce's journey to getting to where we get to him in Endgame.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'll get into that in Endgame. Mm-hmm. But at least it's a nice stepping stone. Yeah. It's a nice step. So I'm doing that with our friend Hugh. So that'll be fun.
Yay, Hugh.
Yeah. So it's going to be a fun, it's a fun plot device that they use in here. We get him in the Hulkbuster, Iron Man suit, which is great. So, you know, it's, you know, he gets to still be kind of super strong, but with some of Tony's gadgets. Mm-hmm. And so it's definitely a fun aspect of, a fun detour for Bruce in that way. So, but yeah, you know, and this is the thing though, they managed to juggle so many storylines, so many character arcs and everything else within this 2.5 hours. They managed to basically advance everybody's plot through all of this. You know, I got to rewind and get back to one of the major plot points of this whole movie is Thor's journey.
Yes.
Because Thor, like we said, Thor in the beginning, we don't know what happens to him, but he ends up getting picked up by the Guardians. And you talked about that, the whole Star-Lord Thor thing happens. And that's just whatever. But
we just need that so we can get him with Rocket. And
get him with Rocket and Groot. Yeah.
Yes.
And go get his new hammer. But it's just like, everybody that Thor has cared about is dead now. Everybody, his mom, his dad, his brother, they're all gone. And so
Heimdall.
Are many of his people. Yeah. Heimdall, his friend. So all of these people are now dead. His whole, you know, and at this point he doesn't really know if the people who got away have gotten away.
Right.
You know, and so he is just devastated, and he is just completely out for vengeance on Thanos at this point. He needs to get a hammer, and he needs to do this because otherwise, like, what meaning does his life have? And you get this through this, like, And at the end, like, he has the chance, and I know you made the note too, you know, like, he should have, like, Thanos even says that he should have gone ahead. Like, he should have killed him. He should have, but Thor will be Thor, and Thor will make that mistake of stabbing him in the chest instead, so that he can try to make some kind of point. Like, I told you I'd get you again, you know, rather than just taking him out like he should have, or cutting off his hand even, like, that, like, that should have been the thing. Like, just cut off the arm, just then he cut off his arm it. And so, and I know that we have to get to that point, we have to have the snap, but it's and this is where we get in the next movie, Thor is just devastated, you know, just Thor cannot reconcile that mistake, and because in the moment of possible victory, he failed. And he continued to fail. Like, you know, that's what happened. Like, throughout this whole thing, yes, he gets his hammer and, you know, he helps save the day in part, but at the end of it, he was the person who failed in the moment of the best chance they had. And that's like I said, this movie is a fucking bummer.
It really is.
You know, not even accounting all the snap stuff, but just like everything is just, it's just so devastating.
Yeah. There's a thousand moments. Yes. When, and like there's two couples that need to reckon with killing their significant other to try to stop this thing from happening. And even then, it still happens. Like, everything conspires. This one thing happening and everyone gets tortured along the way. Absolutely tortured.
Yeah, it's just devastating. And yeah, I just, you know, and you made an apt comparison about Empire and Jedi and how this is the MCU's Empire for sure. Yes. They're down at their worst moment ever. They lose everything.
They lose huge.
Yeah. I mean, the Guardians of the Galaxy is nearly decimated. The only two members that are left are Rocket and Nebula. And we're jumping ahead, but you know, it's just, yeah, but it's just like, oh my God. All right, let's jump back. What else you got?
I had in here that, so I know this was peak badass Steve, but this is also peak adorable Peter Parker. He's so cute in this movie. Every one of his scenes are so sweet. And then there's that part where they're trying, you know, Tony's mad that he stows away into space with them, but then he says he can't be a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man if there's no neighborhood.
Yeah.
He's so cute. He's adorable. And Peter's adorable in this.
No, and this is peak Spider-Man too. Like, this is for me, like, this is why I will continue to scream that Tom Holland is the best Spider-Man. He's the best Peter Parker. He's the best Spider-Man. He just encapsulates everything that is the character in such a way that nobody else has been able to do before. And
Andrew Garfield's still my favorite Spider-Man, but I think that Tom Holland is the best at it.
Yeah,
but I just really like Andrew Garfield. So
people can have their favorites and everything like that. Yeah. Up until Todd and Tom Holland came around, Andrew Garfield was the better Spider-Man for me as well too. Mm-hmm. So, but
I think he's just like a perfect Peter Parker.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I mean, unfortunately, I'll never see him as, like, you know, older than 16. So this poor kid's like, this poor guy's like in his 30s by now, I think. And I'm like, oh, you're such a little kid. This poor guy. Yeah. But
well, I mean, unfortunately and fortunately, he looks young enough that, you know, he'll be able to play it for a while if he does continue to play the character, if he comes back, fingers crossed, because I'd like to see him.
I would like to see the next movie.
At least one more of him being, you know, the actual, you know, New York based, you know, Spider-Man jumping around. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a whole other podcast. But
exactly.
Where his story is right now. I need that movie. You can't do that to me.
Exactly.
You got to make it. The next thing I had was that scene with Gamora and Nebula, where Nebula is all torn apart by Thanos.
Oh,
and they're trying that moment of, we have spent two movies with these women reconciling their relationship.
Yeah.
like understanding their feelings for each other and their love for each other as sisters, and how he absolutely, that scene is brutal. It's awful how he plays them like that, how he's torturing Nebula because he knows it's torturing Gamora, and how terrible that is. That scene is horrifying. They're both, those women, they're such good actresses too. Both of them are so good in this movie. They're good all the time. Nebula is my number five top MCU character. I love Nebula. Her character arc has been so amazing through this whole thing, and she's just incredible.
And I talk about it. I talk about it in my Guardians of the Galaxy episode that she should have been the main villain. In like, Ronan shouldn't have been the villain. If she had been the villain, you know, just doing whatever Thanos wanted, I think it would have been a much more interesting arc.
Yep. I agree with that.
And that, and we could have still landed in the same place with her, rather than having the whole Ronan thing. But you know, and I just think, like, for me, Ronan was just kind of a bland villain. I love the actor.
It was a waste of Lee Pace. Lee Pace would
very
have,
much. Yeah.
A waste of his abilities. He's wonderful. Yeah. And they definitely didn't give him enough to do. And they didn't do enough with that character.
Like, did they not see him in, oh my God, Pushing Daisies? Like, come on, people.
Halt
come
and
on.
Catch Fire, if you haven't watched that.
I didn't see that one yet. But
That's well worth
Pushing
a watch.
Daisies for me is always the, like, the peak Lee Pace. So.
Yes, he's wonderful. So it was that was a misstep. And you could have kept him around too. He could have been someone who came.
Yeah. Back. Yeah. Yeah. It's always disappointing. It always just drives me nuts when they kill villains. It's like, these people can come back. Come on, just incarcerate them. Just like, put them in a jail cell somewhere and then bring them back later.
We randomly get Red Skull here. So.
Yeah.
So random.
It's, speaking of, you know, the guy who's doing, who's playing him this time, because it's not
Hugo Weaving. Yeah.
Ross Marquand. He's playing him, and most people may know him better from The Walking Dead. And I can't remember the character he played, but he does a really good job at basically playing him the same way Hugo Weaving did. I didn't know until afterward that it wasn't Hugo Weaving. I thought it was him the whole time. So I was like, ooh, they got back Hugo Weaving. No. So, and I just, like, I feel like it's such a weird, like, thing. It's a waste of the Red Skull. To have him as this guardian of the Soul Stone.
It didn't make any sense. I mean, I don't know if there is a reason. I mean, he doesn't do that in the comics, right?
No.
Okay, so was it just, and the thing is that if you had Hugo Weaving and you wanted Hugo Weaving to come be a part of this party, then I get it. But you had to find somebody else to pretend to be Hugo Weaving, because you really needed the Red Skull.
I just think it was a weird thing to bring him.
It just seems weird.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a weird thing, especially because of the implications at the end of Endgame, which I'm not going to get into now. But the implications that go into that makes things a little weird for a character there. So it's just odd. It was a very odd choice. I think it was just, because it was the same writers from because it's literally the writers of all the Captain America movies. And so they'd had the character and they were like, well, you know what? He vanished at the end of Captain America, the First Avenger. Maybe this is where he went to after all.
This is like his punishment.
Yeah. His punishment is to, you know,
to
stand
tell
here
people
and,
that, and stand here and tell everybody who their parents are,
a stone that nobody will have, guard a stone that nobody will ever, like, he'll never be able to possess. So I get that that's kind of a punishment, but it's like, okay, but I don't think the stones really have that kind of, you know, intent.
think they planned it, but
so it's just weird. But
it's definitely weird. I just don't know if they did it just for that, like, oh, like that recognition from the audience when his face is revealed and you're like, you know, oh, okay, it's this guy again. But that
I mean,
last 10
I was
seconds.
Glad to see him back, but it was such a weird thing. I was like, I'd rather just see him back as a Captain America antagonist.
Right.
You know, so
he's just hanging out on this mountain.
The more interesting thing would have been for Alexander Pierce to be revealed to be the Red Skull. Like, honestly, like,
ooh,
after all that, yeah, like, you know, to just rip off the mask and just be like Red Skull underneath.
I'm
That would have
here.
Been like, yeah,
that would have been
so because,
great.
So in the 80s, in the Captain America comic book, Red Skull had his consciousness transferred into a clone body, but a clone body of Steve Rogers. Yeah,
that's messed up.
So he looked like Steve for like a long time. He had the face and everything. And, you know, he wasn't trying to pretend to be Captain America, but he was just kind of hiding from in the shadows. And at that point, he would just wear a Red Skull mask until later on his face got messed up. Like,
and then he had a Red Skull.
Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah,
that's
no,
messed up, though.
Yeah. But yeah, so wouldn't it have been interesting to have, like, because Robert Redford kind of looks like a Captain America-esque character, you know, like in his early days, he could have probably played Captain America very well.
Yes, absolutely.
So I think that that would have been like an interesting little wrinkle there and would have made the Red Skull character a lot more interesting also, especially, and then tie back into the whole Hydra-ness of everything if that had been the reveal rather than just him being some dude.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that would have been great. Especially since he did just disappear at the end of the first movie. So it would not have been difficult for him to have been there the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
with
just
Robert Redford's skin over his Red Skull.
Right. So he would wear a different mask and use a American accent.
Right.
So anyway,
that works.
But yeah, so
oh, I like
that was
that.
That was always a plot thread that I heard somebody else mention, like at some point. It, I don't think it was ever something they were going to use, but I heard somebody mention that and I was like, oh, that would have been a much better idea. So
Yes.
As much as I love Winter Soldier, Winter Soldier is like, you know, top two for me. So,
yep. No, Winter Soldier is amazing, but that definitely would have made it just a little bit more
even
amazing.
Just better, a bit better. Yeah. So,
yes.
But yeah, it's, but yeah, his inclusion in this is just weird. It's bizarre.
It is strange. You know,
But,
we get him later, but yeah.
Yeah. Boy, yeah, that's going to be an interesting topic of conversation for the in-game episode. So anyway.
Anywho.
So what else you got for me? What else you got?
Well, I mean, after that is obviously Gamora's heartbreaking death, which is terrible because we know, as we've already mentioned, this Gamora is gone. Loki's gone. Vision's gone. Like, this is the last time we see this character, and it's horrifying. But ooh, then we go back to Wakanda and we get one of the best lines ever. Get this man a shield. That's right. Get this man a shield.
But
they're
then they
coming.
give him the weirdest like little shield things, and I like
well,
they're
cool,
keeping with
though.
Wakandan style.
It's
And
it's
it's
a
cool.
Wakandan
So
shield.
yeah,
But yeah,
so I do like it. I do think it's cool, and it works well with his
with his
outfit that he's
darker
wearing.
costume. He's
So it
got a
works well. Don't get me wrong. I
great
do like it.
Aesthetic in this movie. He looks great. We get to see fan favorite M'Baku. I love M'Baku.
Yes.
He's not in it enough. I need more Winston Duke in this movie, but it's, but
Winston
you know,
Duke
we got
is
a,
great.
we got a
I'm
whole
a big
lot of
fan of
people
the
we got to
movie Us,
cram.
and he's great in that. So, but
He
yeah,
is
he's
wonderful.
But we get that scene of them with the battle. This is like, you know, the every Avengers movie's got the scene with the hordes, the horde battles and everything like that. But we get one of the best sequences, and it's not subtle, but it's like it's one of those things that if you're not really paying attention, it's something that you could miss. And that, you know, it's that moment where everybody's running towards the hordes. And both Black Panther and Captain
and
America
Cap
are
are
outpacing everybody
miles ahead.
Because they're both superhuman. So, or you know, peak human. And so, yeah, they're just outpacing everybody. The only quibble I have with that, though, is that Winter Soldier should have been at least maybe just a little bit behind them, but still ahead of everybody else, because Bucky has had similar procedures. He can go toe to toe with Cap. So
he can. I have heard that his, I mean, I don't know if this is just like, you know, Tumblr shenanigans or if this is true, but I had heard that his serum is not as strong as what Steve got.
Well, yeah.
But still it does. I mean, I know they wanted like that cool shot of Steve and T'Challa running. Yeah. So I get it. And believe me, I am a Bucky girl. So, but it would make the logic state that he should have been close to where they were, not where everybody else.
Even if
was.
Just a little bit behind, for sure, you know, but you know, but somewhere in the middle between you know, Cap and Black Panther and the rest of the group would have been a nice little touch. But I do like that they even added that bit that they show Cap and Black Panther just like outpacing everybody and just getting to the hordes faster and just start taking them out. So yeah, it's a great sequence. You know, I'm neither here nor there for big group battle things. Like they're messy more than anything, and they're chaotic. I like when they get into the little moments where Natasha and Okoye and Wanda all take out Proxima Midnight. It's a great sequence. You know, and I'm all here for And I'm going to say right here, that's the better version of the whole woman power thing than the one that we get in Endgame. Because the Endgame one is all about posing. So
I have written down, She's Not Alone is superior in every way. It is done so much better.
No, yeah.
I remember being annoyed in Endgame. Like, what is this?
I mean, it's a great shot. Don't get me wrong. But it's just a shot. You know, it's not meant for anything else other than just posing, you know?
Yeah. It's just, look at all the women we have. Like, okay, cool. But
yeah.
You know, and then what bothers me that, because I just watched it again last night, because, you know, I have to return to the Jedi this thing. But what annoys me even more is Wasp is supposed to be helping to like fix the van, and she just magically pops up in there. I'm like, what did your beeper go off? It's like, hey, bestie,
wait,
the girls
we got a pose
are getting
moment.
Together. Yeah. We need to, you know, it's like, come on, what is
we got
this?
The photo op moment. Everybody's got to show up.
It's like, she's got help. I'm like, bitch, she doesn't need help. She just took down a whole ship by herself. Like, come on.
Yeah. If anybody needs help, it's Captain
sorry,
Marvel
Hugh,
coming in.
We're
to
yelling
save you
about
guys.
Endgame on the wrong episode.
Yeah, it was relevant.
It was relevant because this scene does it much better.
This scene does it much better.
Much better.
Here's the thing. Like, I get it. You know, that felt more like a studio, like a Kevin Feige thing. Let's get them all together and
get the girls together.
Yeah. Do a group shot one.
No.
And it's
fine.
Don't get me wrong. It's fine. I like it in game. It's great. I love seeing all the characters together like that. Mm-hmm. It's great. But it's not as meaningful as it is in
this one. And so, like, I'm going to Star Wars this up again for a second really quickly, but you have that egregious example of it in Endgame, which is just gross. And then you have the season 2 finale of Mandalorian, where you barely realize that it's all women. And they don't take a second to be like, you know, hey, look, we're all women. We have our weapons. Yeah. No, they're doing their job. They're doing what they're supposed to do, which is, what is happening in this movie when they help Wanda. That's not what's happening in Endgame. Endgame is like a runway walk for absolutely no reason. So anyway, good job, Infinity War. You win this round. You get the point.
But yeah, no, it's a great scene. I love it. It works very well. And it's just, there's a lot going on. We get Thor comes back. He finally comes back with the hammer and everything like that. It's the scenes with him and Eitri and all that, they're great. I love Peter Dinklage.
Yes.
But I kind of glossed over that because it's important but not important. It's a short scene.
When you're cutting back and forth between the battle and that, it's like, oh my god, make the thing, please. Like
just hurry up, get the hammer and get there.
Like get it moving.
Yeah. But it is great because, like I said, I love Peter Dinklage. He's so good. So it's great to see him in even a tiny role in this movie. Mm-hmm. You know, it's great. We get Thor's back. He's got his new hammer. He comes back with he has that great moment with a Cap where they kind of joke each other about
new haircut.
The beard
you
and
got
the
my
haircut.
beard.
Yeah.
What's funnier about it is Steve is so exhausted. Thor is just, he just got here, so he's all fresh. He's like, oh, you know, you copied my beard.
He's
And
fresh
Steve's like,
ish. He just
okay.
had a star blasting him in the back. So I'd say Thor deserves a little bit of tiredness
That
too.
is true.
So
Oh, that is true. Yes.
But
That's that
Thor is a
great line.
god. So
that's what's killing you means when he's
yeah.
it'll kill you. Yeah, we know. But
Yeah.
That is
Only if I
basically
die.
only if I die.
Killing you
Yep.
means. Yeah.
And then it's like, this is my friend Tree. I am Groot. I am Steve
I am
Rogers.
Steve Rogers. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's great. I love that sequence. It's but yeah, you could tell Steve is exhausted. He's like, he's just, he might be superhuman, but he still gets tired, and that's a lot to deal with, because again, hordes of mindless troops just
Gross
trying
things.
to yeah.
They're always
I'm
like
a
weird weasel animal
yeah
things.
they look similar to the Chitauri,
They do.
and I can't remember if they are part of that
I
group or
think they
not,
would.
but
Are the like giant bug things flying around? Because that's what it always means Chitauri to me. Like, even if they're like, there's, the big thingies, the big giant like earthwormy kind of things that are flying around in the
oh
air.
yeah.
Those
Well, the
things.
Chitauri were the Chitauri were the like the troops and stuff like that, not necessarily the ships, but yeah.
I don't think
But
they
yeah.
have them, but they always like
I don't
they always bring
necessarily
those
think the,
guys.
yeah. I don't necessarily think these were Chitauri
I don't
in
think
this
they
movie, but they don't
are.
really explain what they were, so
But they
they just
are
reminded me
in
of
the
them.
flashback. They are in Gamora's flashback. You see them flying
Oh
around.
right,
So
yeah.
they use the
In her.
so he used the Chitauri on her planet.
Yeah,
So we
yeah,
do,
yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, no, that's what that is. What's interesting too is that in that flashback, going back to that, you get what would have happened to Earth if Loki and the Chitauri had been successful, if the Avengers had been able to stop them. So it's interesting to see that. Although in this instance, again, it's weird that if Earth was so important and that he would trust it to Loki and the Chitauri rather than
Do it
going there
himself.
himself with the Black Order, which we see on Gamora's world. So it's like, well, why didn't you go to Earth? Like, so it's just bizarre.
Because they didn't know what they wanted to do in
Well,
Avengers. They were still figuring it out. But yeah, he should have just gone there.
We're
But
not supposed to realize it.
No, don't look behind the curtain.
Right. Hey, I love the MCU, but yeah, they had to find their way for sure, because they didn't know, they knew they wanted Thanos to eventually be the big bad, but they had to figure out how to get to him. So,
and to be fair, it's only when we're sitting here talking about
in
it like
hindsight,
this. Yeah, exactly. Like, otherwise, I was, eating it
oh,
up
I
with a
was,
spoon for 10
yeah,
years. So,
oh yeah,
like, I
every
wasn't
movie,
sitting there
yeah,
going,
I still
hey,
do
this
it,
doesn't make sense.
yeah. I still do it even when it doesn't make sense. I'm just like, yeah, I don't care. Just give it to me. Give it to me. I don't care. I don't care. Give me the Eternals. I don't care. I don't like the Eternals, but I'll take it.
But I'll
know?
take it.
Yeah.
Just give it.
But I mean, and the movie was fine. I don't hate the Eternals.
Yeah.
It's one of my lessers. But this one, it's like, picking up those little plot threads and stuff like that. I love how they did that with this and continued on into this one. What else you got for me?
I know.
Because I'm meandering.
I'm like, we're actually getting close.
You got notes. Yeah.
I do have notes. I love when Steve comes and is trying to make Vision go away, and then Vision is the one who saves him, and he repeats Steve's line from before about how we don't trade lives.
Yeah.
Like, and even though, like, Thanos would have found him even if he ran, but, poor Vision. A moment for Vision. I love him. Felt so bad. I was writing, I think so much starts happening at the end, and I was just like, banging my fingers on my phone to write these notes down. I just have fuck you in capitals after that line. And I don't know what Thanos did, but I'm sure he did something. Oh, because the next thing I have is we're in the endgame now. So this is I know why I typed that. It was because of what Thanos says to Tony after on Titan, when Tony does his absolute best to try to take down Thanos. And then he just like sits him down. He's so condescending.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, you know, to everyone, he just wants to sit them down. Even like to Wanda when he touches her head at the end, it's like, stop. Like, you're not everyone's father. You're not the father of the universe. You're just a big purple asshole. Like, shut up. He's so condescending. Like, I never want to be that person who's mad at actors for their roles, but I feel like every time I see Josh Brolin, I'm just like, because he's great in this. He's a great villain. Because I just want to punch him all the time. But he's just the condescension when he sits Tony down, like, oh, I hope they remember you.
Yeah.
Shut up. Oh my God. So that's what that's all about. I was like, why did I write that? And then, so then Doctor Strange says, we're in the end game now. Because he knows what's going to happen. He's not going to tell anybody. Yeah. He certainly can't tell Tony, because then it won't happen. So now this is when everything just starts rolling to its horrifying conclusion. Like, it doesn't stop. My notes, it's like, we're in the end game now. And then my next note is, I just feel you. So, which means that this is when Vision asks Wanda to destroy the gem. And then she destroys the gem, and then he shows up and brings time back. Oh my God. So it's twice in this movie. It's twice. Peter tries to shoot Gamora, and then he turns it into a bubble gun.
Yeah.
And takes Gamora and throws her off a cliff. And then Wanda pulls out the stone, has to, you know, kill her love. And then it's like, okay, well, I know that was hard for you, but now let me just roll back time, rip the damn thing out of his head. It is so frustrating. It's so frustrating. Those things they do really well in this movie.
Yeah.
Just the
they make you really hate Thanos. And it's like, even if he had a good point, which he doesn't necessarily have a good point. Don't get me wrong. His overall theory is okay-ish. There's better ways to go around it, of course, but you know, murdering half the universe doesn't help. But it's, so that's what they do really good about this, is that even if you kind of agree with his point, he's such a raging asshole that, and like you said, he's so condescending to everybody. He just knows his plan is just so good and so perfect and everything like that.
Oh, sweetie, you tried. Like, nobody needs that. That's his entire attitude is, aw, you're so cute. Thanks for trying. Like, shut up.
He does it constantly, too. It's like every time he defeats somebody, well, you tried. Thanks.
Oh, you tried. A for effort. Like, come on.
Here's a gold star.
He is just the biggest bad. Ugh. But that's it's awful.
That scene is just devastating, because like, yes, you get that heartbreaking moment of her like having to, you know, break that out of him, and then having it rolled back, and then him just pulling it out of him instead. It's just like,
head.
He's dead either way, you know. So,
like, no wonder she's so messed up.
Yeah.
Like, can anyone, like, I mean, my son's always mad at me because I'm always on Wanda's side, and I was like, dude, like, can you blame her? She has been through hell.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
No, it's
So we've already covered Thor. So Thor doesn't go for the head. And even then, he's got to be like, you should have gone for the head. Oh, my God. Should have gone for the head. Snap. And then we get Ariana Greenblatt again. What did it cost? Everything.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah.
That's a great scene. That is a really good
that
scene.
Is. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, because that goes back to, and we didn't talk about it, but that goes back to, you know, Thanos having to kill Gamora. He doesn't want to,
And he does genuinely love her.
That's, yeah, he does genuinely love her. You know,
he wouldn't have gotten the stone otherwise.
Yeah. And that's a great sequence between them as well, too, because, you know, she doesn't realize in that moment how much he actually does love her until she sees him, you know, before he murders her and everything, mm-hmm. that, you know, it breaks his heart. But he believes so truly in his messed up mission that he's willing to kill her to get there. And, yeah. you know, he's willing to sacrifice everything. And so it's just, you know, it sucks.
It
but then we get the snap.
Then the snap.
And then everybody's like, well, what happened? What happened? Nobody knows what happened. Thor was the only one there. Mm-hmm. And Thor is just devastated because he realized, I should have gone for the head. I shouldn't have done what I did, but I did. Or and now
cut off his arm.
Cut off his arm, cut off his head, cut off other. Don't cut just stab him in the chest. Yeah, it was just every step of the way, every chance they had to stop him, they just failed.
Yep.
And then we get like the worst moments of everybody just dusting.
Yep. Bucky first, and then
Bucky first, and then T'Challa. One of the ones that kills me is Sam, because Sam's laying there, he dusts, and Rhodey's looking for him.
Is still
and Rhodey doesn't
him.
See him. Yeah. No. And
nobody sees.
Like, I mean, everybody has to just assume that he dusted, but mm-hmm. nobody saw him. And mm-hmm. so, like, that just was like, I was like, oh man, that's bad.
There's lots of characters you don't see either, because I remember when Endgame was coming and we had the posters, the day those character posters hit, and everybody had one, and it was either, you know, the ones who were still alive or the ones who were dusted. And we were like, sure, he got dusted. We had no, you know, we don't see it happen. But, you know, like there were so many characters that you can't show everyone. There's like 500 people in this movie.
Yeah, exactly. And there were people who weren't in this movie who we weren't sure about, like, you know, mm-hmm. Hawkeye and Ant-Man and stuff that we don't find out until later. And so but I think the worst one for me, the worst one is Peter Parker. That one, and they let him ad lib that, which is crazy. They didn't script that part of it. And you can't tell me that Tom Holland is not an excellent actor scene alone. Everything else aside, he's the best Spider-Man, best Peter Parker ever. And that scene alone just kills me every time. Still watching it every time, because the fear on, like, because he takes, everybody else kind of dusts quickly, you know, his takes a bit.
It takes a while because the spider sense tells him something's wrong.
Yeah.
But he doesn't, you know, so he started feeling it more than everybody else.
Yeah.
They started feeling it when they actually started dissolving. He knew it was coming.
Yeah.
So, and you can see it all over his face. You can see it all over his face. And oh God, Robert Downey Jr.'s performance in this scene too. The two of them.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, you see why I have to put on Endgame after this. Can't leave it right there. Right?
No.
It's like leaving Han Solo in Carbonite. I can't do it. Doesn't matter that it's 2:00 in the morning. I need to put on the last hour of Endgame. Can't do it. It's like doing shaving a haircut and not saying two bits after it. You can't do it.
Right.
You can't leave Spider-Man dusted.
It's bad. Yeah, and this leaves us in such a bad position that, you know, it's half of everybody's gone, half of all the heroes are gone, and some of the big ones as well. So it's like, what are they gonna do? Like, it leaves it in such a bad place. And then, you know, at the end we get the in bit with Hill and Fury.
Yep.
And, you know, Fury starts getting dusted and manages to, you know, use his little beeper send a page
out to Carol. Thank you.
So, you know, which is great. We hadn't had the Captain Marvel movie yet at that point. So it was great. We were like, okay, she's coming.
She's coming.
And we all knew the movie was coming anyway. So it was great. But yeah, it's this is a this, you know, to sum it all up, this is just a bummer of a fucking movie. And that's, I can't understand why anybody says that this is their favorite of any of them, let alone of this and Endgame. But
you know what? Like, I can kind of get it though.
I get it to an extent. Yes. I get that it's a good movie. It's a great movie. It's got everything you want to happen in it and more. It's got huge stakes. There are people left dead in this that will never come back, not in the way that we want them to. And it's, don't get me wrong, I know people like bummer movies. I'm not one of them.
No,
I like bummer movies sometimes. I like movies that kind of end in a bad place. But not my MCU movies.
No.
So it was just like, and to wait, what was it? Was it another year? Was it only a year?
I think it was 6 months.
I think it was the next year because we still had to get through Ant-Man and the Wasp and Captain Marvel.
Oh, right. So we did, yes.
So we did have to
wait
almost another
year. God, the end credit scene of Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Sitting there
with my daughter and both of us just went, no! We just started yelling.
So I'll definitely be getting into that in my next episode.
Good times, good times.
Yes, yes. But yeah, this movie's really good. I love it. It's the great culmination of everything we'd been leading up to. That, you know, this one and Endgame are the great 1-2 punch of everything.
Absolutely.
And it's, I don't know. It's just a bummer, but I love it. It's still a good movie. It's high up there for me.
It's a bummer. It's a good movie. And I think that in these franchise type things, sometimes when you have like a two-parter finale, if you will, this wasn't the finale for the MCU, but it was the finale for the Infinity.
The Thanos saga thing. Yeah.
So the first movie sometimes will just feel like a bunch of setup. You sit around for 2 hours. And I don't think that this is a bunch of setup. I think that there's a lot of payoffs in here. I think that there's a lot of, as we've said, there's a lot of things in here that give you it like a stake and something that will never be able to be fixed. So there's no undoing it in the next movie or any of the other movies. I think that this movie does a really good job of setting all of that up, telling a complete story and leaving you really bummed out. But this is better than some other movies I can think of that just, you know, give you 2 hours of garbage. And then, you know, next time in our big cash grab on the second movie, you will get your whole story. I think this gives us a whole story. It is shot very well. It's structured great. Everybody gets a moment. Some of the like best performances in here. I noticed maybe for the first time that Scarlett Johansson's face when they find Vision's body is, she's so horrified that I was looking at her and I was like, girl, you are like, this is like your Oscar clip. Like she is giving it everything she's got. And that, you know, everybody was in it 110,000%. And I love that.
Yeah.
Absolutely love
it. And that's what I love about these movies too, is that everybody who was involved seems to have enjoyed them and been, you know, even though people like Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans and even Scarlett Johansson, they've gotten out of it now. They're just like, we're pretty much done at this point. That I still love that they gave it their all up until that point, that they were a part of it. They did everything they want and they still have admiration for it as well. Yep. Like I don't hear any of them ever talking about like now going back and going, you know what? It was like, there were bits and pieces I didn't like. You know, but I mean, and I'm sure there are, don't get me wrong, but you know, there's always going to be stuff that they didn't like about it. But in the end that they enjoyed it and they thought it was worthwhile enough that, you know, it was worth doing. And you don't hear that about a lot of other stuff, you know, so especially a lot of other franchises. Mm-hmm. So
no, it's great. I love that.
It's great. Yeah. So again, it just speaks to the testament of the filmmakers, mm-hmm. Kevin Feige himself, and everybody involved in making that all work.
Yeah.
As well as they have. And even to this day, I still, despite, you know, unevenness with maybe phase four and everything like that, I still think that they maintain what they've been doing. And it's still, for me, a quality product and quality storytelling.
Yes.
And filmmaking.
Absolutely. Hard agree. We've reached the end of my notes because my last note is go fuck yourself, you grape bastard.
Yeah, because he gets to just sit there in the sunlight on his planet and all smug.
Stupid cabin. Whatever his cabin, yeah. He's making stew or whatever shenanigans he's up to in there. Like, I just killed half the universe. Let's celebrate.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah. Yeah, no. But yeah. Well, that's all I got for this episode as well. So why don't you let people know where they can find you?
Yay!
Why don't you let people know where they can find you online then?
Yay. You can find me on, I refuse to say the other thing. I'm on Twitter and on Blue Sky at VioletH310. On there, you can see the link to my link tree that has all of my podcast guest appearances. I am about to be on a whole bunch of stuff. The one thing that's kind of really fun that I'm super excited about is I am a part of a Disney series for Den of 10. And we're having a great time putting that together. I love recording with those guys. So we're doing, if you're interested in the podcast, it's a top 10 list where everyone puts together their own personal top 10s. And then we work together to create a collaborative top 10.
Oh,
so
okay.
The episode that's coming out soon that we just recorded is the pre-Renaissance Disney animated movies. So that is 1937 through 1988. And it was a blast. I'm really excited for people to hear that one.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out as well. And I got to get myself a guest appearance on that show as well at some point.
So. Oh, you'd have so much fun with Sam and Ed. They're so much fun. They do. Sometimes they do look for people to do like horror movie type stuff because they did Slasher or something. Yeah. Reach out to them on the Discord.
Yeah. Definitely.
Do it. That's all on the We Made This Podcast Network.
Yeah. No, the We Made This group. They're great. I've been on a couple of their shows and with more to come.
Mm-hmm.
I'll definitely have to check that out. I've got at least four guest appearances coming up on related We Made This shows.
Yay. So. I know one I have of them. On.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. Go check out her stuff. She's become a professional podcast guest now. One of these days, she's actually going to create her own podcast, I'm sure.
Maybe I'll do a show. I have to come up with a good idea, though.
Yeah.
I mean, she's
even
a lot
professional
of
equipment now.
I know. I have my fancy microphone now.
It's been great having you on again. This is your second time on the show. You got one more coming up that I know of for sure. Oh, yeah, two. One next year, one this year.
One next year, one this year. Yes.
Yeah.
Ooh, and I'm sure you'll be on. I'm going to be real excited about
the upcoming one or the one next year.
The upcoming one. I mean, both of them. Good. Both of them. But yeah, we're gonna have that's gonna be a real good conversation.
Yeah, definitely. And she's actually, you know, she's been on the geeky side of things for these last two episodes that she's been on. She's actually coming over to the creepy side, which is mm-hmm. unusual for her because she's not a big horror person. So
I am not, yeah. But this is my what we're going to talk about is my jam, so we're good to go.
Yeah. So it should be a lot of fun. So all right, well, thank you again. I appreciate you coming on the show. And
thank you
so much
for having
me. Hearing from you again soon. Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
Yay.
Thanks again to Violet for joining me. On Monday, Angel Cross returns to the show to talk about Bride of Chucky and Seed of Chucky. And on Friday, Jason LeBlanc joins me to talk Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Thanks for listening. Creepy and Geeky is a part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcast Network. please check out morbidlybeautiful.com/podcasts for more great shows. If you like what you've heard, please consider giving the show 5 stars and a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Also, please share the podcast on social media to help spread the word. Make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app or at creepyandgeeky.com. Music for the podcast is Gratitude, composed by Jerry Smith. You can follow the podcast on social media at Creepy and Geeky on both Twitter and Instagram. If you'd like to follow me, I'm GeekThulu on Twitter and Blue Sky, and Geek.Thulu on Instagram. You can support the podcast by ordering teas and more on TeePublic or by donating to the coffee page. All of the links are in the show notes. Finally, don't forget, stay creepy.